Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast. Kelly decides to shove all the food in his mouth as soon as the camera turns on. Kelly, it's a pleasure to have you back on.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
You'd be talking to me because this is all pre-recorded.
Yep.
Unless you
How
want
are
to
you?
Talk to the audience, that's fine too. Why don't you explain to everybody who you are, first of all?
Well, my name is Kelly Dippy. I'm a paranormal researcher and an artist out of Arizona. I've been friends with Robbie for quite a few years now. Always enjoy doing the podcast. Just kind of a crazy guy who likes to talk about random things, man. We don't always have an agenda here of things to talk about. So we just give it a shot whenever I'm on the show and see what happens.
Well, we had some topics we're going to cover this episode because you mentioned this is how you brought it up to me. You said, how come I've never talked about this, this, and this? And I go, you know how much work I have put in to figure out so many different topics and being able to cover so many, and all I get is criticism. That just shows you the loyalty of the fans.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, but that's how
what
it
is,
works, right?
What is trapped water? I don't know what trapped water is.
So trapped water, man, this is something that's really come to my attention recently. And that's something I feel really passionate about for some reason. Trapped water is the water that's left inside of plastic containers, water bottles, people who don't drink all their water. Then put
oh,
a lid.
So literally the term trapped water. Okay.
Yeah. Which is crazy because like in 2016, it was estimated there were 22 million gallons of trapped water in landfills throughout just, I think, I don't know if that's global or in the United States. I would assume that's kind of like in not so much like in third world countries and stuff like that, like more in the developed West. So I don't know what the exact tally would be today, like almost 10 years later. But I'm assuming that has to be increasing exponentially. And so basically what that is like when we drink water out of our water bottles, we don't think about it. We just put the lid back on it and throw it in the recycle bin or, you know, whatever. Hopefully we're throwing them in the recycle bin instead of the garbage at this point.
Depends. How far is the walk?
Yeah, that's America, man.
At the gas station, they have the recycle thing all the way across the pumps when they have the trash can right by the pumps.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's another wild thing. You know, we live in a developed nation. Like, why are we not don't have like recycle bins next to our garbage cans in every instance?
Because I feel like people want to see that we have recycling bins, so they get to, like, you know, when you're in your neighborhood, you see the guy that pulls out the recycle trash bin, whatever, next to his actual trash bags. If you open it up, there's not really anything in it. There's maybe three bottles. Like, he's trying. But it's really the optics of how it looks. You look like a good neighbor when you got the recycle bins on there until a little kid comes by on a bike and kicks it.
Right. And it's empty. And so, but you know, here's the other thing to think about. Like, no matter how much we recycle, only 10% of that actually gets recycled.
The same people that recycle or praise that they recycle don't pay their taxes. Just check them out. Government, if you're listening, check them out.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And so, you know, I realize that it's an added expense, like for some of us to have to pay for like a recycled bin as opposed to just a garbage bin. But really, I mean, isn't it our responsibility to take care of the planet that we're on? It kind of upsets me that, you know, that recycling is such a sham. It was something we've been doing since like the 80s, man. Or even
They got to incentivize people.
It sucks that we have to incentivize people. The incentive should be, that was weird.
Back to the show. Sorry. That was the weirdest thing I've ever had happen to me mid show or beginning of show.
That's awesome. It was quite an adventure there.
At least you can confirm that it happened and it's not.
Yeah, this is not the person that you think you're talking to.
These are not the droids you're looking for. All right. So go back to, let's talk about trapped water. What about trapped water?
Yeah, so trapped water, right? 22, like in 2016, like I said, 22 million gallons were trapped in these bottles in recycling plants and or in the landfill, whatever. But it's water that's not re-entering our water cycle. The way that our water cycle works is like through evaporation and condensation. And so when that water is not in the cycle, it limits. I mean, obviously, okay, so the world is like the oceans are like billions and trillions of gallons of water. What is, you know, 22 million gallons.
Yeah, but you can't use it. You can't use it.
Right. It's, yes, exactly. That's the thing. We're talking the difference between like fresh water, drinkable, potable water, and water that's not, you know. And so to have 22 million gallons of that water just out of the system, and probably now, like I said, exponentially more, because we're talking 10 years later almost, since that study was conducted. It's just like we've got to be having like millions and millions and millions, maybe even like upward of a billion gallons of water trapped out of our water cycle. And that's, you know, like I said, it works on condensation and evaporation, you know. So
I bet that's a conservative estimate. I know plenty of people that don't just do like a cap full of water that's thrown away. I know people that'll take a couple sips and look at the lady from Signs, a little girl that had water all collecting around her house. I mean, it wasn't trapped because it wasn't enclosed in this thing. But hey, when the aliens come, you know, you want to have like a spare bottle rolling around in the back seat of your car.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I carry spare water with me wherever I go. Many years.
You're also living in the desert, so that's not a dumb option.
Yeah. Well, you know, many years ago when I was a child, I read a story, and I don't know whether it was a true story or just something that was, you know, some work of fiction, but it was about a guy who ran his car off of the edge of a cliff and was trapped in it for like 16 days or something. And like the only way he managed to survive was by sticking a rag on the end of a stick and soaking it in rain puddles. And I was like, that's fucking horrible. I never want that to happen. Excuse my language, but I never want that to happen to me. And so ever since then, I've always carried spare water in my car. Even if I'm just like going with like a friend, I'll grab an extra bottle of water in case something happens.
Are you ever in a scenario where your car would be like near a cliff where you would feel like you can get trapped?
Well, absolutely. You know, I live in Arizona. So I live in the mountains of Arizona. People think that Arizona is a desert, right? But Arizona actually has 13 of the 14 climate zones here in our state. And so we live up at the top of a mountain. And for me to travel a lot of places, there's like these big like cliffs. Like you're driving down winding switchback roads, like from here to Sedona, for example. There's like, we have this thing called the switchbacks, which is just like these winding, like snake S curve roads that go down like these, you know, down an elevation, several thousand feet, probably, we're at 7,500 feet altitude. So I would assume Sedona's got to be at least 1,000 or 1,200, 1,500 feet lower than us. So like some of these cliffs can be pretty treacherous, but there's also like the drive out to the Grand Canyon, the drive up to Page, Utah, or Page, Arizona, I guess, or right on the border of Utah, my bad. But like any place that we kind of go, like any of the tourist places that we go to check out things, we oftentimes experience or are in a situation where like if we could easily drive off a cliff or be run off the road, or you know what I mean? Like, and we live in Arizona, of course, where like it's like people here are kind of crazy, man. Like the sun has cooked most of the
brain. How crazy? Tell me how crazy.
So like, I mean, we could get into it, man. Like, When I first moved here, there was a couple of guys who got in trouble for hacking a guy with a machete out in traffic. Like they had some sort of road rage incident. They just kind of like these two dudes attacked one guy and hacked him up with a machete, right? And so that's kind of crazy. But I live on the border. You know, we hear a lot about the Texas border war and stuff like that right now, but Arizona shares a border with Mexico too. And like we get a lot of, I feel like, well, you know, not all immigrants that come from the southern border are bad people. There are bad people who come across the southern border, and we get our fair share of those here. But it's not just immigrants. I mean, obviously, immigrants share a special sort of privilege when it comes to certain types of crimes. I feel like because like undocumented people are hard to hold accountable for things. But I mean, it's natives here too. It's native, you know, residents of Arizona. We're all out here in the desert in Phoenix. It gets 125 degrees. It cooks people's brains, man. Like it really does.
Do you guys have a large amount of homeless population there?
We do. The influx of people coming from California is pretty wild right now too. Not just homeless people, but you know, people that are fleeing California because of failed policies. They're coming over here and starting the same policies here. But yeah, like I live in Flagstaff, Arizona, which has got a very high like transient population because we live along I-40, which is really the only way to go from east to west through this area here, unless you're traveling like some some like not so well traveled passes and stuff up north, a little, you know, higher, I guess, through like Nevada and like the Wyoming area and stuff. But a lot of those places are even like less densely populated than Arizona is. So that makes that travel really rough. But our transient population here, we have like a lot of hotels that we've converted into like homeless. I don't know if it's like temporary living spaces or if you want to call them shelters or what you really call those types of things. But all along like historic Route 66 here, we have a lot of those types of facilities set up currently. But yeah, people travel through here. You see people all the time like holding up signs that says like traveling broke and hungry. How are you traveling if you're broke and hungry, man? Don't you think it's a good idea to maybe pack some gas money and a couple of like a pack of crackers and some cheese or something on the way, like to go someplace? But it's, you know, and I try and help out as many people as I can whenever I encounter them like that. But it's rough here, man, like to see that many people constantly struggling. And we're not even a big city. We got like a population. We're a college town. You know what I mean? 200.
They can clean it up like they did in New York when they had Xi Jinping visit, when they had the guy from North Korea visit. I don't know if it's North Korea or is it China, but when he came and visited New York City, like their homeless population was not to be found. All the streets were cleaned up on that specific area. And people go like, well, if they can do it then, like, why did he even do it when Xi Jinping came? It's like, well, they're going to be selling property to the Chinese or whoever. So showing off that, hey, our street's not covered in puke and all that, you know, it's going to be a good buy for you. And China would buy it anyway if it was covered in puke. It would just bring the market value down.
Right, right. You know, I get that. And it's like, you know, if we can do it for certain situations, why can't we do it permanently? You're right. And the reason for that is like, you know, billions and billions of dollars worth of aid money that's flowing out of our economy into foreign nations right now.
Well, plus it's a predictable and easy political kind of positive that you can throw out when you're campaigning by saying, hey, I'll help clean up the homeless population. And it's like when people are already having problems with it as it is, just because like there's the whole squatters' rights thing that's going on in California, which is ridiculous. Apparently, people can just randomly squat on your house and you can't do anything about them. You can't remove them. And if they kill you, nothing happens. But if you kill them, that's a problem. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? Like,
right.
I thought you step on somebody's property. I was threatened with a shotgun, you know?
Right. Well, you know, days of old, man, we don't live in the same world that we grew up in. And it's
the only time it was ever acceptable for me to step on my neighbor's property was when I accidentally missed where the yard dividing line was and I would cut his grass on accident, like a piece of it. And he would be like, oh, thanks. And I'm like, wait, you're not mad at me that I accidentally cut your grass and I can't put it back. So it's like, he was just like, hey, thanks for doing me a favor. I'm like, you piece of shit.
Well, you know, you're lucky that they didn't shoot you because, like, you know, we had the guy, like, some kids turned around in his driveway, right? And he shot and killed somebody recently,
Jesus.
A young girl. That was all over national news last year. And then, like, there was some instances where, like, these kids were doing the ding-dong ditch thing, you know, ring the doorbell or knock on the door and then take off running or whatever. And people kids getting shot in the back for doing that shit, man. Like from homeowners and property owners. And it's like, wait a minute, you know, like there's a difference between defending your property and just outright murdering somebody because you think you have the right. And it's like, I don't know, man.
It started when we lost the neighborhood watch. They used to just be chilling with binoculars. But once those guys went away, you left it up to the homeowners to take care of it themselves. And some of the homeowners aren't necessarily stable in the mind.
Right. But we see examples of that everywhere, you know, like even I guess there was a couple that was charged with pointing their guns at like protesters that were marching their lawn or something last, you know, in 2021 or 2020 or whatever. No shots were fired, but because they pointed their weapons at people, they're in trouble for it.
Well, how else were you supposed to get them to stop protesting?
You know, get them off my lawn. Get them, you know, like if you're on my lawn, I think I should have the right to tell you to get the fuck off my property.
And does it ever stop at just a protest or does a rock end up going through the window?
Well, when does it stop? You know what I mean? And once that starts, you know, mob mentality, man, it could be like a scary thing. So,
dude, the worst parts in society come out at Black Friday when people are just stepping over others for TVs. That stuff's crazy. I would never go to a Black Friday sale ever again. I went one time. That's not ever happening again.
I've been to a couple and they're rowdy. It's insane. Nothing like, again, I'm fortunate because I live in a pretty small town. But like, I can't imagine going to like a Black Friday sale in like LA, New York, Chicago, Detroit, You know, Phoenix even, you know, like, wow, like, nah, I'm good on that. Like, I don't like crowds of people anyway, and we're just getting, like, more and more off the hook with things. You know, speaking of crazy people, man, what's going on with the eclipse, dude? Like, have you heard and seen, the crazy shit going on with this right now?
I know they got a bunch of 3D glasses everywhere that people are going to be using to watch the eclipse. And I go, this is going to be like in the pandemic when you saw a bunch of masks lying in the street. The day after the eclipse is over, there's going to be so many of those things littered everywhere. Not helping out the, you know, you're talking about trapped water. What about all these eclipse sunglasses? We're about to have a scourge of them all over the streets.
You know, that's a distinct possibility. Maybe not. I don't know. They're pretty expensive, like $4 a pair or something like that.
That's not expensive. So maybe,
well, when you consider what it is, you know, like, piece of cardboard that you're going to wear on your face.
I know. And Matt, that, I don't feel like it's going to work. There's going to be so many people that are going to be like, it didn't work. I went blind.
There were instances during the last eclipse, which I think was just last year, where glasses were given out like sold in mass quantity that were not properly UV rated to look at an eclipse. And there were people who had lots of eye damage going on, as from what I understand. But I think, I mean,
just
right
take
now,
a break. You stare up at it 10 seconds and then you turn your head, and then you stare up at it for 10 seconds and you turn your head. You don't need to stare for the full five, whatever long it's up there.
Well, what I think is really wild about this eclipse is that, like, since I've been born, there have been at least probably like 12 to 24 eclipses. I don't know exactly how often it occurs or whatever, but like this one, like, there are news channels telling people, like, keep your pets and kids inside and don't look outside. Don't, like, a lot of things are just, it seems like, out of control out there. They're telling people, like, stock up like 2 weeks worth of food and water
for what, the eclipse?
Yeah, for the eclipse.
It's gonna last 2.5 minutes, man. You're gonna get through it,
right? Well, that's what I'm thinking, you know what I mean? But like, they're like, so there's
what
a lot
would be really cool is that any photo that gets shared online of the eclipse, that would also make you go blind if you stared at it too long. Then I would really respect it. It's like The Ring. It just leaves you like a girl comes out of a well and just comes out of your phone and gets you.
That's kind of an interesting thought. That would be kind of interesting. I painted the eclipse during the eclipse last year for a couple of people.
Naked?
No, unfortunately, I couldn't do that. I did have neighbors outside. Who were staring at the eclipse, and they wanted to see the sun, not the full moon. So
there's a bunch of people that are sharing that they want to go outside and experience the full power of the eclipse by just walking out naked and staring at it.
You know, people sun their perineums, I guess.
California people, my man. Do you think anything strange is going to happen? Did you look at any of the theories or potentialities?
So, yeah, you know, like, I don't know, man. A lot of religious groups are saying, like, this falls in line with some biblical prophecies and stuff that have taken place this year. And that, like, so my sister, who I haven't spoken to in several years since my mom passed away, actually, contacted me yesterday and asked me about some stuff with the eclipse, you know, because I'm usually pretty well studied on this type of stuff. And she was like talking about how, like, there were pastors of churches telling people, you know, stay indoors and don't answer. If somebody comes and knocks on the door, don't answer it. And don't look out the windows because demons are going to be present here and prevalent. And so I've heard things like all kinds of theories ranging from like portals being open. CERN, what I think is really interesting is that during the eclipse, NASA plans on firing three rockets called Apex.
I know. What the hell?
towards like. Okay, so my question is, like, if we're 94 million miles away from the sun in reality, and we're going to launch some rockets, like, what, 300,000 feet up in the air to take some, like, really getting that 300,000 feet closer to whatever, is that really going to provide us a bunch of information that we can't, just, like...
I'm not even thinking about the information. My first thought is, isn't the rocket, you're flying upwards in the sky, so you're going to be kind of looking straight at the sun, and you're locked in a seat to where you can only look forward. You can get, you're moving at so many Gs, you can't turn your head. So they tell you not to stare at the eclipse with your bare eyes. The astronauts sitting there like, I can't fucking look away. Like, they just can't because they're stuck, and they're going up and propelling into. So you're sending them basically at the thing, and then
well,
when they all come down,
but...
hold on. When they all come down, they're all dressed like Stevie Wonder with the giant sunglasses because they're blind from being shot at the sun.
You know, I don't know if it's manned, if any of these rockets will have astronauts on them, or if they're unmanned, or what the deal is. There are planes that you can, like, reserve to view, or, like, buy tickets on, I guess, and you can observe the eclipse from aboard a plane, which is supposed to be different than it is from ground level. And
I just feel like you don't want to be on an airplane when an eclipse like that is happening. All right, we'll get into this because this is where you kind of mentioned in the beginning about paranormal investigation, but we'll talk about the supernatural for a minute. I don't necessarily think that it's going to like portals are going to open up, but I think that like if you really are on an airplane going like, let's say 30,000 feet and an eclipse is happening, I don't think that there isn't a chance that it would mess with. You can't even have your damn cell phone connected to the internet when you're on an airplane. You're telling me the sun being blocked out by the moon is not going to cause some type of interference?
Well, and that's interesting. You know, like I don't know how that all is in effect. Again, the moon is 250,000 miles away from us, which is a drop of pee in a bucket, man, compared to like the distance that we are from the sun itself. So, though, you know, we've been having these recent upticks in earthquake activity, seismic activity, the earthquakes in New Jersey, which a lot of people are like kind of trying to connect to the solar activity, the earthquake in Taiwan that just recently happened.
My buddy was in that one. Yeah, it was really rough. He said, I felt the one that hit New Jersey. But it was like just, I was literally getting ready for a podcast. And then the thing, my desk started shaking. And I was like, either my dog is banging her foot on the floor, trying to itch herself, or we're having an earthquake. And it was an earthquake. I saw everybody going, oh my God, you feel the earthquake? I was like, no. And I bet you really didn't feel it either.
Right. You know, everybody wants to be part of something. So, like, when that type of stuff happens, like, everybody.
I survived a natural disaster. I'm like, buck up, bro. Go. It's more of a brag to say you survived a blizzard than an earthquake.
Right. Absolutely.
I'm talking about the Jake Gyllenhaal blizzard where the whole world kind of shut down and turned into ice.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know.
All right, supernatural, though. Do you think, like, what's your...
So CERN, what I was getting at was that CERN is going to be operating for the first time in 2 years during the eclipse. And CERN is all about doing things like micro black holes and stuff like that, which, you know, what do we know about that type of stuff ultimately, really? I mean, we're just there on the brink of discovery with it. And so discoveries oftentimes are safe, but sometimes they're not. The discovery of nuclear power wasn't necessarily the safest thing we ever came up with, but here yet, you know, 80 years later, here we are with every madman on the planet threatening.
All right, I'm bringing you back in because you apparently tuned yourself out. Supernatural stuff. Let's talk about the supernatural. You mentioned one of the topics you wanted to talk about was the chupacabra. Let's get into the supernatural, the legends, the folklore, the myths. But I want to talk about, do you think, like, we talk about cooking brains in Arizona of the sun. I'm interested. Do you think that there's a heavy population of people in Arizona that believe in these type of supernatural type beliefs and myths? Obviously, there's a severe spectrum of it, but I'm talking about light touch, things that are kind of unexplainable, that are real occurrences that have happened compared to the people that think that they can talk to JFK and channel him from the dead. I don't necessarily need to hear that.
Well, so talking about the people in Arizona and their beliefs in the supernatural, it depends on where you're at, really, I feel like. But so we've had some events that have occurred here. The Phoenix Lights, for example, happened, I think, in like 94. And it was like one of the largest witnessed alien events, you know, alien encounters that has ever taken place, where like 10,000 people saw these lights in the sky, an echelon shaped series of lights. The governor kind of made light of it and got in a little bit of trouble for it. So, I think that people in Arizona do have like an anchor to the paranormal. Obviously here we have a lot of Native American tribes. And some of them believe in things like the Skinwalker, or the Wendigo, which are paranormal beings. Down in Sedona is a really interesting place, man. We talk about vortices down there. There's a lot of people who are into like New Age sort of movement and these occult movements down in Arizona that are based on things like extraterrestrials. And they talk about a place called Bell Rock, which is supposed to be like a intergalactic fueling station for UFOs. So I guess a lot of UFOs are seen there. I recently, well, last year I went out to a little town called Seligman and did an awesome paranormal investigation out there. We did it in public with like 40 different people in attendance. We got a lot of interesting stuff caught on film. Things like flickering lights, noises, stuff going on with the spirit box and with the radios and stuff in the background, lights and EMF detectors and all kinds of stuff were like really working hard that night. And I feel like that's kind of like everywhere we go here. Like there's a spot a little bit east of here called the Apache Death Cave, where
5 stars on Yelp.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I listed it on, I made a Google review about it. And then I had people talking about like come on and make comments about it to me, like, well, don't tell people where this is at because we don't want them vandalizing it and this and that and the other. And it's like, well, yeah, no, I get that. But you also want to share these historic sites with people. But what happened was a couple hundred years ago, these Apache took a Native American princess hostage and then or prisoner, I guess. I don't know if you call it a hostage at that time, but a prisoner, and then traveled across the desert with her. The Navajo people sent out a war party to chase them. They caught up with them out at the place called, it was either Two Guns or Twin Arrows, which is out here, real close to that. I don't think it was called that at the time, but they caught them out in this little cave and trapped them inside the Apache in there. By the time they caught up with them, the Native American princess had already been killed and disposed of. So the Navajo were very upset by this. They trapped all these Apache in this cave, chased their horses in after them, and then fired flaming arrows into the cave, killing the horses and setting them on fire, where the smoke asphyxiated the Apache warriors. And I'm really interested. I want to go and do an investigation out there. I've taken some equipment out there during the daytime hours and stuff. And of course, hauntings will happen anytime, day or night. And you get some strange readings from some of the stuff out there. So I'd really like to go and do like a full-fledged investigation out there. But again, it's kind of just like out in the middle of the desert. And
I'm surprised you're more interested in the paranormal than you are would be with like trying to find the chupacabra or the Bigfoot. I really don't want to talk about the paranormal. I'd rather talk about the more cryptid stuff because I have an interest in that.
Well, I think it all ties in together, man. Like, it's all sort of like you got people who are talking about like Bigfoot being an interdimensional alien and stuff like that. Who knows, man? You know, like they, you know, but chupacabra is a really interesting thing. I feel like we have some chupacabra type legends out here, but the chupacabra is an interesting thing because it's tied in all around the world, man. Like, everybody has legends of the chupacabra from Montauk.
Explain it to people.
Yeah, well, the chupacabra is a Spanish word, a Latin word meaning goat sucker. And so apparently, like in Puerto Rico many years ago, when I first became interested in the chupacabra was because of stories coming out of Puerto Rico about these animal mutilations that were taking place where they would find things like rabbits, goats, other like livestock type things that would be drained of blood but have no real visible marks on them except for a couple of puncture wounds, maybe like to the back of the neck or something. And so you start thinking about like vampire bats or things. What kind of things could create this type of stuff? Well, vampire bat exists. They're little bitty tiny things. They usually drink the blood out of cows, and they're not going to drain the entire blood system up a cow through two puncture wounds. It's not like they all line up and are like, oh, hey, next. So when you find, you know, some evidence like that, it's kind of interesting. But then I started researching it, and it becomes such a mythological type creature because, like, descriptions range from something that looks like a sick coyote to, like, creature that walks on its hind legs, that has glowing spines and is able to levitate. And then they start talking about, well, where did it come from? Is it interdimensional? Is it from space? Was it created in the lab by, you know, some of these people think that it was created in the lab by the government and then escaped. Some people think that it's an alien extraterrestrial. Some people think that it's just a naturally occurring, you know, cryptid type creature that we just haven't identified yet, which I'm thinking to myself, like from the descriptions of it, they're so far, like scattered all over the place. We're probably dealing with multiple cryptids that sort of maybe fit into the same category here. but I don't know that. I mean, obviously, I don't think it's like one being that's like, well, who knows? Maybe it's one creature.
Well, do you believe that there could be creatures that might not be identified and might have lived at a certain point that have some certain different characteristics than the creatures that we have booked and recorded now?
The world's a big place, man. We have unexplored territory all over the planet. Now, while we're getting like better with like GPS and stuff like that, you know, like satellite scanning, we're finding like things like pyramids and places that we didn't expect to find them and stuff like that. But a creature, you think about the size of a coyote compared to a Mayan pyramid. Coyote could be hiding out in the bushes some places while you're taking these pictures. You know what I mean? Or any of these types of cryptids, even a dinosaur, for example. Nessie and stuff like that. We see reports of them all over the place, and you would think that with satellite imagery as advanced as it is today, like I was told one time that in 1969 the CIA could read the date off of a dime being held in the hands of a man in Red Square, Moscow, Russia, from satellite. So if we have that kind of technology, like I don't see how we have anything on the earth that's not explored or discovered. But yet we've constantly are finding like new species of animals and new species of insects and new species of birds and all these different things. Why can't, I mean, it stands to reason if it's happening on a micro scale, it could happen on a macro scale. There are places that, you know, these types of things could hide out, caves in the dark, deep, dark places of the earth. I don't know what all dwells in a cave, or what might come out of the earth, but you know, there are places that are unexplored. And so when you have places that are unexplored, you have the potential of discoveries that haven't been made yet. And so when you start talking about the paranormal, there's so much connection between like ghosts and aliens, aliens and Bigfoot, Bigfoot and, you know, things like the Skinwalker. People try and make these connections. I don't know if it's where they exist or where they don't exist. But it's interesting to see how they all sort of tie into one another. So it's not like you can just take one element of the paranormal and try and explain that away, because it ties in with so many other things. You know, like the chupacabra is a perfect example of that. When you start talking about like, was it a government created entity? Was it something that the government or shadow governments or the military industrial complex or somebody out there who's, you know, doing whatever under yet? I have not.
You probably should. Not.
Yeah.
You're very more scatterbrained. You're a little bit more focused when you're on it.
Yeah, you know, I am actually. I'm very ADHD feeling right now, but I've been trying not to smoke during the morning. And so that brings me to my next thing here. I was actually going to eat some edibles this morning while I was on.
Probably should have did that before the podcast happened, but okay.
Well, I did, but it's like,
out of all the times we record, why would you change up your routine?
Well, I recently developed some issues, some health issues. So I've stopped smoking as much in the morning. I try not to smoke until after lunchtime.
Is it because you really started kind of freaking out when you step outside and realizing that everybody's literally cooking their brains in Arizona because it's like 120 degrees outside?
Yeah.
Just go for the smoke. I don't want you eat. That's going to take forever to kick in.
Sort of thing going on here. But yeah, I can smoke for today.
I do want to talk while you're doing that. I do want to talk about some of the more cryptid and more paranormal, not paranormal as much, but more of the supernatural beliefs of when we talk about monsters. Like I'll ask you things about like, what about Bigfoot? What about the Chupacabra? Which one do you believe the most? Which one do you not believe? And what do you do about all the hoaxes and stuff and all the people out there that are just looking for attention? Because I've talked to some Bigfoot researchers. I love Coast to Coast. It's one of my favorite shows, the old Bell programs. And I do believe that people can see something, but I'm also interested in how the mind works and can convince somebody that something is there when really it's not. Like, I think if you believe in something so much, you eventually think, I did have this story that happened. And it's like, well, that really happened, or you just mess with your own memories a little bit.
Well, and I think that there's a little bit of both of that takes place. And
that whole thing I just said was a buffer for you to smoke, and you didn't do it.
I'm loading it, man. You got it. I'm trying here.
You're not. What are you doing to me?
You got to break up the weed, get it in the bowl. There we go.
But when we talk about the cryptid stuff, which we're going to get into soon, as soon as I can sense that you're on the level that I want you to be at, I don't think that did it. But okay, we'll be all right. When we talk about the, like, what's your thoughts on Bigfoot? What's your thoughts on these extra ideas of thought out there when it comes to beings that we might not have recognized in a societal standpoint?
So I think that there's a lot of societal influence on these things. We all want to fit in, right? We all want to be part of society. So we kind of like, I mean, I keep it's not uncommon for people to make up stories to be like, oh, I fit in with that too. Oh yeah, I experienced that, maybe whether they did or not. So I do think that there's some of that influence going on. But again, like I live in a part of the country where all of these things are very like considered to be very, very real, especially by the Native American cultures. And I reference that because they've been around for thousands of years here, and their stories go back for thousands of years here. So I tend to think, like when we talk about legends and myths and stuff of that nature, the human psyche, like back in the day, like we've evolved. We haven't, like back in the day, things were harder for men. Like we had to hunt our food and figure out which things. Which berries were poisonous and which mushrooms we could eat, and which. So I feel like we were busier during that time of our life, so busy that we didn't have time to sit around and make up stories about these monsters. So if we do hear stories about those monsters, they're probably real, based on that idea, based on like, why would you sit around? I mean, maybe
So
to.
you mean older stories, the more myth, what we would classify as myth probably has more reality than the ones that would be more modern sense.
Right. But those carry over into the modern sense as well. Because nowadays we do it for entertainment, right? We have more time on our hands. We don't have to hunt. We can go to the grocery store. So after we're done spending 30 minutes or an hour at the grocery store, we don't spend the rest of our day looking for food. We have the ability, we have time, spare time on our hands to kind of concentrate on these things. You get like a certain group of people, and it happens in like the UFO community. Where you have like disinformation being spread. I don't know what the appeal. I would really like to. I've taken several years of psychology, but I don't understand what the appeal is to people to make stuff up.
Because it's an attention thing. You get a lot of follows and group, a lot of people hook on to your story and you become part of the legend in a sense when you can really go out there and spread disinformation. Some of it, I believe, is purposely intended by the American government to do that, but a lot of it is just people that just want to create an account with like a duck as a profile picture and get some attention.
Right. Richard Doty, he's talk about government disinformation. Richard Doty was he worked for the OSI out of Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and there was a scientist there who he became close friends with, and then this guy wound up getting put in a mental hospital and I think committing suicide or dying sometime down the road after that, a couple of years after that, because of disinformation that Richard Doty was feeding him about stuff. He was seeing, this guy was watching highly experimental aircraft do things on the Air Force base. And then this guy, Richard Doty, who he came in contact with, and the OSI, by the way, is Office of Special Investigations, in case you don't know, it's like a department that the Air Force runs, I believe.
I know about the OSS, but I don't know about the OSI.
Yeah, Office of Special Investigations. And so Richard Doty's like, I'm surprised that you have never really encountered this guy in all of your talks with guy is like the guy from the Discovery Channel. I can't think of his name right now, but you've had
Nick
him on
Pope.
in the past. Yeah, Nick Pope. Nick Pope is familiar with like Richard Doty and that type of stuff. But Richard Doty went into got involved not only with this guy, but he got involved with the UFO community at large and then put out a lot of disinformation there. But then he comes back like a few years later with like this guilty conscience sort of complex thing and is like, look, I want to like out myself. I'm a member of this organization. I worked for the government and I did this to you guys. But all the disinformation I gave you was actually real information. So how confusing is that, man? And to be involved in those type of circles and try and have to weed out like the truth. Okay, so everything you told us was a lie, but it wasn't a lie. It was all really true. And they don't just, it's not just with the UFO community, because like the UFO community is tied in now with the Bigfoot community. And because now the Bigfoot is being like thought of as maybe like perhaps an interdimensional being, one who comes in and out of existence. There's actually a new show or movie coming out called Sasquatch Sunrise that I just saw the previews for last night. And I was thinking about our podcast today and the cryptids and stuff. And it's about big, like Sasquatches that eat hallucinogenic mushrooms and start like evolving into human beings, I guess, or having like, you know, the there's a theory about that, you know, like Joe Rogan talks about it, I guess.
It's called the Stone Ape Theory is what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And so they have a new, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if it's a movie or a television show. I just kind of caught like a brief glimpse of it yesterday. And I was like, the Sasquatch eats some hallucinogenic mushrooms and he goes on this trip. And then he goes and tells all the Sasquatch buddies, like, look, it's these mushrooms. And they pull them off the side of the stump and shit and eating them. And then they all start the trip. And then like from that, like, I guess like the show just sort of goes. And
well, the stoned ape theory is about them when there was like the before we evolved, like people say we evolved from chimps. They believe that the part of that evolution and what that catalyst was the usage of psychedelic mushrooms that really kind of put us on a different course. And then through a couple thousand years, it just we evolved into the species that we are now. I mean, it's Michael Pollan's work. He might have a lot of good research and evidence based on that. I don't necessarily think I believe in that 100%. I mean, there is an explanation of like, why is the universe created? You know, we don't really know. There's many different theories and many possibilities, but there is an unknown answer. What is consciousness? Unknown answer. What is the evolutionary thing? Unknown answer. So you really get down to the basic necessities of where things start to develop and where things start to evolve. I mean, you can watch things adapt and change in crazy dramatic ways. I mean, look at us 100 years ago, we're completely different. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for me to look at like things like Bigfoot and things like that and hear the various perspectives on it. I find it interesting because everyone has their own kind of branching point or another part. And I'm like, I don't necessarily think it's alien stuff, but I mean, there's definitely had to be something at a point that was here and older. And there's a lot of things like that. People talk about finding giant bones and all these types of things. I mean, do you toss it out? To me, it's just, I find it more interesting. Like, I don't have to believe it, but I like to listen to it because it's cool. It's interesting subjects for me because I'm sitting there like, yeah, what happens if like you really think about everything we know being wrong? And kind of like it's a different way, but we neglected to look at it because it doesn't go in the good textbook definition of what we want people to remember us by.
Or because people are influencing it to be something that it's not.
They did it in ancient Egypt when they're doing the hieroglyphs. You think they wanted to include the fat people? No, they didn't want to include the fat people. That's why there's no... There were fat Egyptians.
There were.
People don't think about it, but if you really examine it, they didn't record those down because they wanted to show the best of what they would consider peak specimens. And having one of those shows weakness in a society. It was never thought about being fat as being a good thing until relatively recently.
Well, it depends on what culture you're in too, because like the Hawaiians, the Polynesian people, like the bigger you are, the more of a kingly status you hold.
That's the same thing in like some old royalty countries, but I think we phased out of that.
Right. You know, and I don't know. I mean,
now it's about all the steroids. Take them all.
Well,
you might look jacked and your dick might be small, but God, you'll look like a Greek god. That's actually one of the things going on in our culture. Yeah, we'll go into it. There's one thing going on in our culture right now, which is the Adonis complex. If you've noticed, a lot of kids like my age specifically, like my generation looks a lot different than a 26-year-old back in like the 70s or the 80s or the 60s or something like that. Usually you saw someone, they look like that's a man, like that's a man. But now you're seeing kids that are like in their 30s, and I'm relatively in this age range as well too. But we don't look like, we look like adults, I guess, but we also have more what I wouldn't call feminine characteristics. They're more beta characteristics of what you might want to consider them. Now, I'm not a beta and I'm not an alpha. I'm not any of this. I'm just saying when you look at the characteristics of like, I have rough hands only because I work and I work out. But most kids have very soft hands, you know, and I'm not talking about kids like under the age of 18, but I'm talking about people in their 20s. Most people in their 20s now look like best example, Seinfeld. The cast of that show was supposed to be playing the part and their age ranges were 29 years old. They look like they're 50 when they're playing the show, But that at that time period, that's what 29 looked like. The people on Friends, it's the same thing. They were supposed to be in their 20s, but they were really, looking like they're in their 30s now to us. It's the Adonis complex culture. And really, if you kind of point back to like when civilizations start to really fall apart, look at what the old Greek gods were based in. Were they super lean and jacked, or were they just kind of skinny and kind of fit? And they had what? The smallest little peckers, because it was the Adonis complex. It was this art of beauty, which was these unflawed characteristics. They weren't grizzly men. They weren't lumberjacks with big puffy hair, chest, and giant ripped muscles. They were just kind of shredded and kind of lean based on the average society's view of what fitness is today. And but they weren't like it's the craziest thing I started noticing. I was like, oh my God, it's the Adonis complex. We're literally falling into that right now. We're getting guys that are becoming more feminine. You could say plastics in the water. We can do that. That's fine. I believe it 100%. But there's really a testosterone drop. But with that also comes this like kids on their cell phones. What are they looking at instead of a girl's feministic characteristics? What are they looking at? Oh, she has nice shoes. Oh, she has pretty hands. Oh, she has pretty hair. It's this culture of beauty that is somehow reversing back to when we were back in like the Greek days, when you weren't necessarily looking at, like in the Greek ancient days, you could talk about looking at a person's land, looking at a person's family, looking at a person's wealth stature as characteristics of what you would want to marry. Then you get to the more male dominant evolutionary chain things, which is looking at a certain feministic characteristics that trigger your emotional and kind of hormonal responses in a man. And then you kind of go into what we're kind of focusing in on now, which is this idea of flawless beauty. We talk about a society that's filled with imperfections, but one of our biggest imperfections is this idea of not knowing what we want. And with that cultural trend and change, you start coming back to the point now where we talk about, like, if you look at how the Greek gods were based, were they necessarily super strong, really buff people? They were kind of buff, but more from a stature of like they had just no flaws about them. They're perfectly chiseled. They're perfectly carved. They're flawed. They have no wrinkles. They have none of these types of features, which in society we have bred the beauty industry to create none of these flaws. And I'm really ranting at this point, but it's an interesting, really, avenue to go down when you look at the Adonis complex that we're all obsessed with. I don't want a cellulite scratch. I don't want this. And I'm part of the fitness industry, and that's what everyone tries to eliminate. And it's brought in a new drug into people's lives now, which is Ozempic. That's a diabetes medication that people take, and it's an appetite suppressant. People that don't have diabetes are just taking it so they can lose weight. And I've watched people drop 30, 40 pounds, and they think it's going to stay off of them. I'm like, wait till you start eating again. It's going to come on twice as fast.
It's about healthy living, not just about, it's a lifestyle. You know what I mean? It's like people who get bariatric surgery and then they're not accustomed to the lifestyle. They have to lose weight in order to go ahead and go through with the gastric bypass. But then afterwards, like if you don't maintain like a specific regimen, you can die from like the weight gain, the weight fluctuations and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like putting the weight back on is deadly for those people. But it's funny that you mentioned that because we look when I go, I live around the corner from a health food store. And I don't shop there very often. I go there once in a while because it's like, boom, right here. I need to stop by, pick up an onion, a $4 onion, which I can go and get like an onion at Fry's. I don't know if I can plug people's names like that, but I'm sorry if I can't. But I go to the grocery store around the way.
Oh,
That's
I give a
oh,
shit.
okay. I didn't know.
I don't like you plugging Walmart as much because
Right.
they
Yeah.
suck.
So. But yeah, they do. They do.
They
But I
treat their
could go
employees
to
like shit.
Walmart and grab fucking onion for a buck. You know what I mean? Or I could go to Fry's, whatever, get it for a buck, maybe a buck 50. But so I don't go to that health food store very often. But one thing I do notice when I go there, people who are filled with preservatives are, I hate to say it, but better looking than the people who eat.
Really? Wow.
The people who eat at the health food store look like dried out old leather saddles. You know what I mean? That have been left in the sun too long. And I'm just like, oh, wow, okay. Like you can tell that these people are not full of preservatives. But so what's, I mean, is beauty an indication of health? In some instances, it can be.
Well, some of the fitness people are the most unhealthy people you'll ever meet, just because their diet restrictions and things go a little. When you start your fitness journey, you kind of start off at a good level, but then after a couple of years, it starts developing certain disorders and certain things like that. That really becomes the opposite of healthy, and it's more like an addiction thing that starts to happen.
Yeah. So I think about Jack LaLanne, and I use this as an example a lot. You know what I mean? A man who is basically obsessed with health, who, you know what happened to him? He died. He died like all of us. And he didn't die at especially ripe old age, 94. But the oldest man that I ever knew, or I didn't know, I had seen him. He was like 112 years old, and he was talking about how he drank every morning. His morning regimen was a shot of whiskey, a cigar on the porch, fried eggs and bacon that he shared with his like 28 or 31-year-old cat or whatever. And it was like they did these things together. And it's more like it's about being happy and stress-free and living the good life that you want to live, as opposed to necessarily. I mean, guys drop dead all the time in their 40s jogging.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily about believing the whole like, oh, it's you're cutting your life by 12 years if you smoke cigarettes and if you do this. I mean, I'm sure there is science behind it, but I really think it's like it's kind of roll the dice random. I mean, my grandmom smoked like a pack of cigarettes a day and lived to be like 95 years old. And then you could take the singer and guitar player and I mean, popular musician Robert Palmer. That man smoked 60 cigarettes a day and sung like an angel. I mean, he did die at like 54 years old, but it was of a heart attack, which could have been all just genetic factors to him. It didn't necessarily have to be the cigarettes. And I'm not defending cigarettes. I'm just saying we don't know how much time we have.
Absolutely. You know, I think of my mom as an example. And I talk about her like that too. Like, she died a couple of years ago. And she started smoking when she was 6 years old.
Jesus.
Her father smoked like in a time when they didn't have filters on cigarettes. So you only smoked the cigarette like down apart to a certain point, and then they would throw the
Yeah.
leftover tobacco in the paper as the butt. And so the kids would go by and unroll that tobacco and roll it up. My mom says they rolled it in a brown paper bag and smoked it like that. Can you imagine that shit? So, like, that sounds harsh and horrible, but she smoked her entire life, man. And that was like her favorite thing to do. I don't know how she probably smoked at least a pack a day, maybe more, up until she was like in her, I don't know, she was 80 or 81, 82 when she passed away. And really, so she
I might
probably, I mean,
have to
she
edit
was.
that out.
Oh, my bad. Okay. So she smoked several, like almost probably a pack or more a day, for 75 years. And what she died from may not have been even cigarette related. You know what I mean? Could have
Well,
been
do you think
anything.
Big Pharma is a good thing or a bad thing? The fact that they advertise pharmaceutical drugs to people. And if you really examine it from like, let's try and find the positive and the negative to it. Obviously, we've talked about the negatives at length and people have studied the negatives at length. But really, we're a society that's focused on beauty and it's really the quest for immortality. It's really trying our hardest to find ways to prolong our life, which necessarily might not be prolonging our life.
Right. For all sorts of developments, you have unintended consequences, right? Not every development is a good thing. Not every step forward is always a good thing, because you find things like you're experimenting with stuff that we've never dealt with before. And some of these things have side effects. A lot of these medications are the side effects are worse than the symptoms of what you're suffering. You know what I mean? Like, you see it all the time. Like, this could cause you to shit your pants, and it could cause you to,
I don't trust anybody who hasn't shit their pants at least once.
well, maybe.
Like once a year at the most, you have to shit your pants like at least once a year and I'll trust you.
Never trust a fart, bro.
Of
Never.
course, and always sit to pee.
But the like you're gonna. That's a weird thing too, isn't it, man? Like, it's you're supposed you're designed. Men are actually designed to sit pee.
I don't want to go into that. No, sorry, it was a throwaway. Don't go into it.
I know, whatever. But And then like our
Hit your bong one more time. We're going back to the immortality topic. That's a good topic. I'm not letting you get off that one.
Immortality. AGI says that we will, they were talking about with the advances in AGI, we could potentially live to be 500 years old, starting within the next like 10 years.
Do you want to live that long though? Really? Come on.
Who would want to? Well, people do. I don't know why. Some people, like, I don't know, biblically, some people live to be almost 1,000 years old. Methuselah, for example, was 969 years old or something, 63 years old or whatever it was whenever he died.
I don't think that's real, to be honest with you.
I don't know how they kept time back then.
I don't know. Maybe every day was like 7 years in dog years or something. Were they just like, that's how he lived to be that long? He really died at 20.
All right. Who knows?
He just looked like shit because he never put on sunscreen. How do people survive without getting sunscreen? How come we have more skin cancer today than we do back in like the ancient days when nobody had it, basically?
Well, and maybe they did, maybe they didn't. We don't know. How would we truly know that to be real about it?
I don't know. I feel like someone would have wrote that down. Like Bobby died of, you know, looking like a saddle because he soaked up too much sun.
Well, maybe so, but they, like, I think about it like this, like life expectancy was 35 in the 1800s. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's because that's not true necessarily. That's not true. Leonidas, the king of three, you know, the movie 300.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, when Leonidas went into battle, he was 61 years old.
Absolutely. Yeah.
People don't know that.
Yeah. It's in the movie. He wasn't portrayed as that. He was portrayed like in his 30s, probably.
Yeah. He was played by Gerard Butler and he was ripped.
Right, you know, and that probably wasn't the case either. He was probably kind of a heavy set guy.
They say life expectancy was like you were lucky to live to be past like 25. I was like, well, it's because the way that we viewed the stats were like birth deaths and things that were very, very in the womb and kind of things that were very young, like kind of infant deaths. And it gets skewed with the number of people. Surprisingly, a lot of people, even in ancient days, lived to be old. I mean, Sparta was basically a gerontocracy. It was involved with a lot of elderly people. The Council of Elders is what they called it. But people over 60 were invited in there. And that ruled Sparta. That was Sparta's government. So when you really examine people living back in the ancient days, a lot of people lived past a certain point if they didn't die from war purposes. A lot of people were living to be elderly age. It wasn't like our health just randomly kicked off to where we could live to be 100 years old. We are prolonging our life, but before there was never really a focus. You know, back in the ancient days, it wasn't about living to be old. It was living to live. It was about fighting and trying to conquer and survive and enjoy life. And now we've been focused with, we want to make life last as long as possible.
You're right. Well, you know, interesting thinking about Leonidas being 51 or 61 years old, because, you know, Mike Tyson, who's in his 50s now, is about to fight Jake Paul coming up here in June or July.
He better win. He better win.
He's going to tear that kid up, dude.
I'm a little nervous about it.
Tyson is a fucking monster, bro. Like,
I just think he's going to hurt himself in training and keep on going.
Dude, it wouldn't be the first time, dude. He's hurt himself before in training and then fought like a couple of weeks later. So, you know, if it happens, it happens. But I don't know, man. Tyson is a beast, man. He's like just in his, I think he's in his, he's more experienced. He's been through prison. He's been through life. And I think that, you know, my dad used to always say, in the end, old age and treachery will overcome youth and vigor every time. And
well, there's a really good quote that's, show me a young man who isn't liberal, I'll show you a man with no heart. Show me an old man who's not conservative, I'll show you a person with no brain.
Nice, right? Exactly. It's funny how, like, I think about how much more liberal I was when I was in my 20s and 30s, even than I am now that I'm approaching 50. I've become a little bit more conservative.
Why do you think people are trying to prolong their life on the basis that most people complain about their life every second of every day?
A lot of people do.
Why would you make it last longer?
Dude, I don't know. I get up, I'm sore in the morning when I wake up. And I think to myself, how am I going to do this when I'm, how am I going to get out of bed when I'm 60? I'm like 47 right now. 48, just turned 48 actually. And I'm like thinking to myself, like, I don't know if I can do this for another 30, 40
when you turn
years.
48?
Like, just back in March 16th.
Well, happy birthday. I didn't know.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate
Wait,
that.
I mean, I think I called you.
You, I don't know. I think we spoke around that time.
Probably.
So we used to talk a lot
Look,
more.
My body can last forever, but my brain is going to shit fast. I'm trying my hardest here, but these overnights are killing me right now, dude.
So I just recently connected with one of my best friends from high school. His name was Chris McGeorge. And I spent years looking for this guy, but I remembered a couple of things about him. And one that was, he was like almost obsessed with working out. His favorite exercise was tricep extensions. I remember that. That's how into working out he was. And he always, it was funny because he always used to be like, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to do this thing. And blah, blah, blah. Just playing around really. But, and now like he's my age, obviously we're both probably roughly the same age. He might be a year or two younger than me. But he was talking about how he's got like bad knees now and like this is falling apart on him and this is falling apart on him and stuff like that. And I was like, man, I thought like working out all the time is supposed to keep you in shape and young. You know what I mean? Like you sound like you have more health issues than I do. And that's kind of saying a lot because I'm a 285-pound fucking dude. You know what I mean? I'm not in the best health, but I manage, you know what I mean? I do what I need to do and do it every day, you know, and I hustle and I walk like 10 miles a day. Sometimes it's a minimum. So, you know, I'm not out there doing a bunch of cardio. I know you do cardio from like, you were saying like the other day, sometimes from like, what, 7 p.m. till 4 a.m. I know that you're a beast, man. You know what I mean? I've watched you over the last few years. And
is there a way we can stick on the Adonis complex thing, or are you just going to keep going off into segues? Complex?
Isn't that part of it?
Not really, because the way that the society views beauty compared to the way that we view beauty in ourselves is a little bit different. I mean, I'm not a big fan of like when the fitness culture originally, the bodybuilder image that everyone knows, like I would know and you would know, maybe the newer generations might not look at it so extensively, but the things we see in competitions when those people are lean, that started with like Arnold. If you look at people before that, there's workout videos of people on the Titanic. They were not in shape at all, and they were not using machines that would ever give them muscles. They were using like a rope that would go around their sides of their waist to try and burn the fat off. And it was like, it doesn't make sense. But it was the early days of working out. It was Arnold's culture that really kind of brought in this new era of bodybuilding and sculpting, because nobody had ever really seen anything like that before. A guy with, you know, look at the old boxer photos. Those guys don't have six packs. But then look at the when the like the 70s and the 60s really start taking off, and you start seeing people either trying other growth hormones, and that's what we do now. I mean, the list of illegal supplements that are slowly becoming legal are insane. And it's just, to me, it's just interesting because I wonder when we're going to go back to where artists and people with that like weird, like kind of like they're just thin. They're not really jacked. They're not big. They're just thin. And that really starts to become kind of like the trend again. I mean, I think we're, as a society, kind of shifting around the globe here. I mean, back in like the ancient days, besides the Adonis people that were around there, there were also the super fat, rich, royal Greeks that were getting grapes fed to them. So people like that too.
Right. Well, but you know, the Adonis complex is, I mean, I got to say, like, when I think of the Adonis complex, what I think of is somebody who is obsessed with not being fat. Obsessed, whether they're thin or whether they're jacked or whether they're ripped or whatever. I think about somebody who is interested in diet supplements, which are pretty much all just legal forms of speed. I think about people who spend a lot of time at the gym working out. I think about,
are you just describing me?
Well, not necessarily, but yeah. I mean, you fit some of those profiles, right? People who are obsessed with what they eat, what they put into their bodies. And then you've got people who like aren't like that. You know what I mean? And a lot of those people are not thin people. I'm pretty obsessed with what I put into my body, actually, to be honest. I drink a lot of water.
Why don't you smoke another thing and we'll get down into it. you're letting me down on this podcast. I mean, you're letting me down. You're hurting me, dude.
You're kind of giving off that vibe today, man. Like,
nah, man. I was thinking we were gonna go into some stuff, but you can't. You've been on like 1,000 different tangents and haven't finished a single one, my guy.
Well, because they all are interconnected, man. They're all interconnected.
How is the Adonis complex interconnected with Bigfoot? You hit me on that one, and I'll give you all my money right now.
Well, okay. I watched a movie last night about guys.
damn it. Stop. I don't want to be convinced of this.
Yeah, dude. People who were on methamphetamine in this movie last night thought that they were opening a channel to.
What were you watching?
It was called Welcome to Willits, California, or Welcome to Willits or something
they
like that.
They were on meth trying to channel open a.
They were on meth. They were talking about so being chemical pathways. And it goes back to like the thing we were talking about with the
Sasquatch. That's cocaine energy.
These kids thought that it was cocaine, but this guy was like, no, it's called like emerald crystal or whatever, emerald something or whatever, but it was like meth. And it was just produced in the Emerald Triangle, which is where they grow a lot of weed and stuff.
Have you ever seen the original RoboCop?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was watching it yesterday, and the guy, I was like, the people are on cocaine making this movie, because the guy, when he enters the dude's house, he goes, bitches leave. And I'm like, there was a guy starting a line off a table and was just like, here's a perfect line to say as this bad guy walks in the door, bitches leave.
Right, dude. So chemical pathways is what they were talking about, like being able to see, connect with these beings, you know what I mean? Like it opens up the mind, the third eye or the minds, whatever. It opens up these pathways to being able to communicate and see things like Sasquatch, aliens, and communicate with them. And so a lot of those beliefs transcend into the Native American cultures too, because you get like these ghost adventures with Zach Bagans recently. They were out here at Skinwalker Canyon here in Arizona, I guess. And these Native American folks came out and were telling them, man, like, you got to like take this thing. It's called whatever. I don't know. They're probably giving them peyote or something, or some sort of hallucinogenic drug. It got everybody tripping, but they wanted them to be like in that mindset before they went in to go hunt for the Skinwalker.
Probably ayahuasca.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what it was. They called it. They were kind of making fun of Zach whenever they gave it to him, I feel like, because they were like, well, this is called the Ghostbuster. And so, but this lady wasn't telling them that she was giving them something to make them trip. She was just like, take this. And then, so then they got into the spirit world. And so you see that like in the movie Young Guns, they talk about being in the spirit world when they're tripping on peyote. And we used to use that as a reference when I used to do LSD and eat mushrooms and shit, man. It was always like, let's take a trip to the spirit world.
I bet you that there's a bunch of people that are waiting for the eclipse to happen so they can start tripping on some mushrooms.
Oh, I bet, dude. I'm sure of it, dude. Like, I can't imagine that they're not. It's not mushrooms. Who knows what? Tripping on something. But.
Why'd you put it away? I was trying to give you some room to be able to hit it before I went into.
Okay. All right. Because I was talking. And so I was sort of like.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to get a rant going so I could be able to give you some time to be able to.
Yeah. No. And so.
Do you believe that the only way that we can actually perceive things that are on like maybe a different plane is with altered chemicals in our bodies? Like if that's the way that we've kind of evolved now to the point where we've numbed our senses. I mean, a lot of people have extra abilities, I would say, like another sense, you know, we can't explain why we can always get a sense that someone's staring at us when we're not necessarily looking at them. But do you think that maybe these types of things that people talk about when they're tripping on drugs is really opening up something? Because they seem so in belief of it when they experience it. Like it was so real to them where I'm like, okay, well, you obviously didn't experience nothing. You saw something.
Yeah, no, I don't think we have to be under that influence, but I think when we are under the influence of a drug, it definitely makes us more susceptible to being able to see those types of things. Children and animals see those things. Cats, you know, they talk about cats seeing those things because cats are constantly tripping and they have like chemical.
My dog felt that earthquake before the earthquake happened.
Right? They have a sixth sense, right?
I heard her downstairs run upstairs and then bark really, really loud. And then next thing I know, my whole house was shaking. But I was like, damn, you couldn't have given me more of a heads up. Like, give me a 5-minute heads up. I can get some shit and get out of the house. That was at least like 10 seconds. That wasn't even that. That was not an alert. My phone would give me an Amber Alert of a missing child before my dog told me there was an earthquake happening. It's like the moment it happened, my dog was like, woof. And I was like, what? And then the earthquake happened. I was like, what? What kind of alarm system is that?
Right. It's funny, though, because it was early warning, just not really early warning. But yeah, dude, I think we I don't know, man. I don't know if we, because I can experience, I've experienced some things, and almost all of the things that I've experienced have been during sober moments. But I've seen UFOs. I've seen what I believe to be UFOs. I mean, they're unidentified. I don't know what the fuck they were. I saw one the other day in broad daylight, me and my wife. I was like, I saw something. It was like a silver reflection in the sky, and it was there and it was gone. And I told my wife, I was like, whoa, that was weird. I just saw something fucking strange in the sky. And then she saw it, and I saw it again. And we were both like, oh, maybe it was a plane. Cause it was just like, oh, there it is again. But then after that, we started looking, it was clear blue skies, and there was nowhere to be found. Like nowhere. It was like it flashed in and flashed out, and it flashed in and flashed out, and it was gone. But it was a silver reflection, and it was really peculiar and bizarre. I wasn't stoned. I wasn't fucking anything. And my wife doesn't do anything. So, you know, like I haven't fucked with hallucinogenic drugs in years, but since I moved to Flagstaff, really. But I've seen at least, like, I've had at least 4 or 5 UFO encounters here in Flagstaff. And probably not so many before that. Maybe once or twice when I was a kid, I saw some things in the sky with family and stuff around. But
does it ever get recorded or reported by other people in the area besides yourself?
Well, so interestingly enough, yes and no. Flagstaff, again, we had Phoenix Lights that happened here in 94. But before that, I think Travis Walton was abducted out of Snowflake, and they made that movie Fire in the Sky about that. And there are other reports of things happening here, and not just reports like in recent times, but it goes all the way back to Native American time, you know, the ancient Native American times here. Thousands of years they've reported contact with extraterrestrials here through, and we see that in these cave paintings and stuff like that, these weird like figures that are not, and then Kachina, you know, the Kachina dolls are all these like kind of monster looking things that I don't know. I don't want to, you know, I don't know which tribe it is who makes the Kachinas. Maybe it's the Hopi, whatever. Maybe several different tribes do. But there are these like monster looking things. And they talk about the sky people and the ant people, the Anak that came out of the ground and taught them how to like grow corn, rice, and beans and stuff here, and then return to wherever. But Chaco Canyon is a big place for like this extraterrestrial type stuff, but it's all closed down because NASA took that shit over for some reason. I don't really know why. People talk about like Stargates being over there and shit like that. I don't want to get off on that tangent. Stargate. So in the 90s, they had a movie about Stargate, but it's like, I guess where they think that they can travel in there to like from one star to another, like from one place to another faster than the speed of light, perhaps, or at however, you know, teleportation. It has to do with teleportation. I don't know, man. There's like an entire group of people that talk about that. Like there's subcultures and theories on the internet about the reason why we were in Iraq for so long was because of Stargate technology in the Middle East. And because, you know, whenever we first went to Iraq and put boots down on the ground, the first thing we did is went to the museums and went to like the religious centers and cleaned out like artifacts. It was like a Nazi, like the shit the Nazis did during World War II. And then we went for the gold, and then we went to fucking for whatever else that followed that. But that was the first thing that they did, is they went to the museums and shit and collected all these religious artifacts. What the fuck is that about? Like, what does the fucking military need with that shit? What is the Department of Defense going into a country, and the first thing they do is take out their religious artifacts?
I don't know. It's good leverage if you're holding it over somebody.
Well, I guess so. But it's also good leverage to like work on whatever narrative they feel like they need to adjust. You know what I mean? Like, It's a common practice. Whenever a country invades another country, you destroy their literature, you destroy their religion, you start, like, if you can't destroy it, you incorporate it into yours. That's why we see, like, so much, like, with, like, the Greek and Roman and the Egyptian stuff, whenever, like, that happened, whenever the Greeks and Romans went in and, like, just incorporated their, like, your gods aren't this anymore, they're this, but it's the same guy, so you just got a different name. And so that's how we got, like, modern day, a lot of modern day holidays and stuff, is because of the way that, like, the Roman Catholic Church incorporated the Christians into their beliefs. You know what I mean? Like, they wanted the people who followed the guy Christ to, instead of, like, they couldn't eradicate them. Tacitus, the ancient Roman writer, wrote that the Christians were like a vermin, a plague. And there were so many different sects of Christians in the first century, that were all, like, they kind of had, like, one figurehead, but they were, like, really loosely organized. So there was all kinds of, like, cults and sects and weird, like, whatever going on, but they couldn't even agree with themselves, because they were kind of scattered, because some of them followed one apostle and one followed this disciple and whatever. It was just a conglomeration, but there were so many of them that the Romans needed to put them under one collective sort of, like, umbrella, right? Like, we got to get some sort of control over this shit. And that's why, you know, we have the umbrella Catholic Church that sees, has overseen so many of these Christian religions over the years. Even today when we talk about it, you know, like, the Catholic Church is made up of different branches. It's not just one little, you know, one centralized organization. They do have a centralized power, so, you know,
it's like an octopus power. It's got tentacles,
but yeah, it's got tentacles. Exactly. Perfect, thank you.
Well, someone's gonna help you out. Jesus Christ.
Even with that, like,
fucking hey, Pope, man,
so, like, the Pope recently, like, announced,
what's,
I guess,
with you and the Catholic Church? You're just hitting on them. Every episode now is all about the Catholic Church.
No, it's, well, it's,
we
not
went from
Catholic.
Stargates to Catholic Church, but how about, so, we,
because
don't say they're connected.
They're connected.
Unless the Pope's got a Stargate under his little funny hat.
Exactly. Well, no, he might have it in the like, underground Vatican City.
All right. We don't know what's in there. I'll give you that. I don't know what's in there.
Yeah. So nobody does. And so, yeah. You know,
the fact that it is so secret to get into the archives is what scares me. I don't know why they keep that so private. What do you got in there that is so private that you need to have, like, 7 different recommendations from all these prestigious schools to be able to even visit the archive for, like, an hour?
Right? What is that about? Why shouldn't that knowledge just be free to everybody?
Why doesn't the government raid that?
FIOA or whatever it is.
They're really slick. Look, the government, as much as they say that they're trying to crack down on crime, they don't really do a good job of it, because it took them forever to find Epstein, and then it took them forever to go, like, they're not even doing the Vatican archives, like I said, but they'll be more than happy to go invade someone who's, you know, spying on Area 51.
Right, exactly. It's kind of just wild, man, but the Vatican runs things like the Satan telescope, or Lucifer telescope, or whatever it is, you know what I mean? There's, like, they name all their telescopes after, like, Satan and Lucifer and, like, weird stuff.
I didn't picture Lucifer to be an astronomer.
Lucifer is the morning star, right? The light bringer. So that's what that name literally translates to. Luxfor, the bringer of light. So
I thought that was a casino in Vegas.
Yeah, that's the Luxor.
Oh,
but yeah, that Luxor versus Luxor,
giant pyramid with a giant light beaming out of the top of it that blinds jets when they fly
over. Right, because it's Lux and Lux. The root word would be Lux, which is light. That's, like, I guess the Latin word for light, Lux. So again, it's weird that the Vatican would even have these telescopes, right? Because, like, in the Bible, it says things like, you know, you shouldn't be practicing astrology or looking to the stars, whatever. It wants us to look for the stars, to the stars for signs, and then it talks about not looking to the stars for signs. And I don't know, whenever, I mean, we could go into, like, an hours long thing about, like, when.
I'm just hoping you stick with one topic for a good 5 minutes. It would be fantastic, brother. I'm
It's
telling
all
you,
interrelated, man. It's all
I'm so,
interrelated because
I don't even know if this podcast is going to be usable. You've went on to so many different tangents.
the Pope recently said, like, he made comments about like extraterrestrial life for the first time
Did he
ever. Like, the
really?
church
Did he,
has never
like,
supported
dead
that.
serious? Is that really happen?
That's fucking real, man. Like,
That's crazy.
yes, within like the last 2 years,
I thought
there's
they would
been
deny
fucking.
that all the way to their dying day, even with the aliens in front of them. They'd be like, nah.
Yes, and that's what's not happening. That's not what's happening. That's what I'm getting at, man. Like, that's how it's all connected, is because these guys know that something is up. All right, they have secrets in the Vatican archives, right, that they're not telling us about. And the Pope is like, well, yeah, we should really start considering the fact that extraterrestrial life might fucking really be a real thing. And okay. So what does that entail? What does that even mean? But is it really extraterrestrial? Because now, like, we've got everybody, like, the government's looking for underwater shit, right? USOs.
I think it's more like religious texts and sacred stuff that they just don't want to feel like they have the need to share. That might actually improve our own history. I mean, what about, like, for you, for instance, you live in Arizona. We've talked about this a few times about the Arizona history, but you start learning things about your own town's history and kind of like the culture behind it. Really kind of, I mean, where does your distrust for just the official story of things come from?
Well, when I first came here, I learned that there was an underground of Flagstaff, like a literal underground, like tunnels that went all throughout the city. And public officials had those sealed off, I guess within the last 20 years, probably, maybe 30 years. But I was told that those were used during Prohibition, and maybe they were used during Prohibition to kind of like move from building to building and place to place here. But that was actually built during the when the railroad runs right through here, and that underground tunnels were built during that time when they were building the railroad through here, because the Chinese laborers weren't allowed to be above ground.
Yeah, we've talked about this, but I mean, is that where the distrust came from, or what else came from that?
No, I mean, but that's just an example of it, you know, in my own town, that, like, you know, like, they kind of like, oh, let's sweep that under the rug. You know what I mean? Well, why don't we make that? Why don't we talk about that? Why don't, I mean, that's fucking, we need to know, you know, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it, right? So I feel like, I mean, it's not necessarily where the root is, and it would be really hard to identify where the root of it is, because there's so much bullshit that I've heard from like government, from like local to state. We were talking about the reports of UFO and paranormal, you know, like I consider alien shit to be paranormal.
Okay.
Okay, that's how, like, the paranormal is sort of like an umbrella word to cover things like cryptids, ghosts, aliens, all that kind of shit. Anything that would just not fall under the category of like, this is normal everyday shit. But the paranormal is becoming more normal every day, I feel like, more normalized, really. But I was a student here. I've done a lot of things. You know, I've told you I've like guest lectured at the community college here, but I was also a student there for a while. And I worked as a teacher's aide and a teacher's, you know, assistant, student teacher or whatever there. And I did some research one time. It was interesting research, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this or not, but I called all of the law enforcement agencies, or all everybody, like all the governmental agencies that I could think of in the area. And I asked them a question: who fields reports? Who can I talk to about fielding reports on paranormal activity in this area, whether it's ghosts, whether it's Bigfoot sightings, whether it's alien encounters, UFO abductions, UFO sightings? Who can I talk to about that? And at every level, from my local police station to the sheriff's office to the state police, the FBI, the Army base out here, Camp Navajo, I was given like basically a cookie cutter answer. Every time I asked that question, I asked a cookie cutter question, I was given a cookie cutter answer. And it was really weird, because The question was, obviously, who can I speak to about these types of things? And the answer I was given was, we don't have any agents or departments or any way to like compartmentalize any of those reports. If you wanted to find that information out, you would literally have to sift through every police report that was ever filed to find which ones fit your categories, because we don't like compartmentalize them like that. And I was like, well, that's fucking weird, because you would think, like, you know, this is 2024. Everybody's interested in this. Everybody wants to know. These are like statistics and information that we need to know. My last call was to the CIA. And this is the most interesting phone call of my life, because the lady on the other end of the other line, whenever she answered the phone, she said, "Hello, Mr. Diffie. How can I help you today?" And I said, "Well, I have a question for you. I'd like to know who I would speak to about UFO sightings in the area here, in my local area. Like, what agencies would I speak to?" And she was like, her answer was so just like the same cookie cutter thing. And I was like, "Well, that's not the question I asked you." And she's like, "Yeah, I know." She's like, "Well, we don't have anybody." And I was like, "You're the CIA. You're telling me you don't have, you're giving me the same bullshit cookie cutter answer that six other organizations just gave me. And then when I told you that's not even the question I asked you, you said, 'I know.'" Like, she wasn't going to answer the question. She didn't care what the question was. The answer was this. And then, like, I just felt like she already knew what I was going to ask whenever I called. You know what I mean? She'd been listening. The CIA had been, whatever I had done had triggered. They were listening to, they knew what I was going to fucking ask before I even asked it, really, I think. But it was an experience, man. Like, every one of these agencies said the same thing. Like, "We don't compartmentalize that." Bullshit, you don't compartmentalize that. Somebody somewhere is tracking that information. The evidence is ATIP, right? I don't know, man. And so that causes a great deal of distrust in me about anything that these guys are going to tell me. And again, you know, like, knowing the things that I know about guys like Richard Doty, who are disinformation specialists. I used to think that about Stephen Greer. I don't know. I feel like, if you know who, I don't know if you know who he is. He's like all the CS6 or whatever, or CS5, or where they're making, like, trying to make contact with aliens out there, and allegedly making contact with aliens through like telepathic methods and shit. Like, they get like these groups of people who go out to the beach and they all meditate and do whatever. It's kind of,
yeah, but do you believe that, or does it sound like more culty than it does?
No, man. I don't know, because this guy has actually had like this, he goes to Congress and goes and talks to like presidents of countries.
Yeah, well, Vernon Supreme, who wears a boot on his head, is running for political office, and he goes to Congress all the time. Doesn't mean I'm going to listen to what he says. I do like his no paying for gas mentality that he has out there. I just don't think financially that's going to work.
Yeah, you know, I wish that was the case. But, I mean, Stephen Greer, like, makes, he's like, has like meetings with the Department of Defense. That's not an easy thing to do. Like, Department of Defense officials and shit. And like, he's pretty well connected. But I mean, so does, like, okay, Skinwalker Ranch, we can talk about, you want to know about local legends and shit, man? And the way this is all connected, when you talk about Skinwalker Ranch, you talk about like all kinds of things, right? It's not just the paranormal activity out there, is UFO activity, it's ghost activity, it's Bigfoot activity, it's werewolf activity, it's Skinwalker activity, it's direwolf activity, it is underground, things that live underground, and things that live in the air, and things that we can't see, and forces of whatever. But Stephen Greenstreet has an expose on that you can look up, probably searching his name, about Skinwalker Ranch. And it talks about how that's like an entertainment property, and it talks about like Bigelow Industries. If you know who this guy who runs Bigelow Aerospace is, I forget his first name, something, his last name is Bigelow. But he invested $22 million of his own money for research out at Skinwalker Ranch. And that was like all done under the ATIP umbrella also. Like Luis Elizondo and shit like that. Those guys have all been involved with this type of with this stuff out there at Skinwalker. But after they had the property for 20 years, they gave it up to this guy, Brandon Fugel, who now has the show Secret of Skinwalker Ranch or whatever. And so Stephen Greenstreet goes out there and he like does like this whole expose on Brandon Fugel and how it's, you know, all these guys are tied into the Mormon church. They all, you know, have their, at one point, the three biggest film industries or three biggest film companies in the country, I think, were run by Mormons, Jews, and Jehovah's Witness, if I'm not mistaken. And it was like Lionsgate, Universal, and I don't remember what the other one was and who owns which one or whatever. But predictive programming is part of all of this. We could go into like hours of talk about that type of shit. And
well, I got 5 minutes, so.
Right. Well, I mean, just saying.
We might have to try and find a wrapping point.
This guy talks about it. He goes out and does like an expose about it and how this is all like, it's listed as an entertainment property. Okay. And it's owned under private ownership. But allegedly there's portals to other dimensions and portals to outer space and stargates are out there at this location. Here in Arizona, down by Sedona, which is a 20-minute drive from where I live in Flagstaff, is a place called Bradshaw Ranch. And in the 90s, they started experiencing some of this type of activity out there. Portals opening up on the property, UFO activity, encounters with extraterrestrial beings. And allegedly there are books out there that have been written about this that have hundreds of pieces of photographic evidence or whatever. I haven't seen any of the photographic evidence, but I have heard a lot of stories about this. And the federal government went in and claimed that shit is eminent domain. They started investigating these claims that were being made and then went in and took the property as eminent domain, and nobody's allowed on it now. NAU, which is the Northern Arizona University, is conducting some sort of garden experiment out there right now. But a lot of people believe that's just a cover for whatever else is going on out there. You know what I mean? Because why would they claim that it is, you know, go in and take over the property where all this weird, paranormal, extraterrestrial, Bigfoot, everything was out there. Everything has been seen out there and discussed as like being out there. It's the sister to Skinwalker Ranch. But like Skinwalker Ranch is under private ownership still, and this place isn't. This place belongs to the government, and nobody can go out there and really see what's going on or whatever. But the people who live there, Terry Bradshaw, and I think it was is his name not Terry Bradshaw?
I'll say that's the football player. Terry Bradshaw.
Well, yeah, I think he shares the name with the football player, but it's not the same Terry Bradshaw.
It would be cool if it was the same Terry Bradshaw.
Maybe it's, I don't know. I don't think it is. But this guy named Terry Bradshaw owned the ranch, and then his wife has gotten together with some other people and like written these books and stuff about it. And they talk about like shit happening out there, you know, and whether or not like I don't feel like whatever they were having problems with out there, the government came in and did like took a look at it and was like, all right, you have to leave the property. And once the thing, like when you like understand how eminent domain works, man, like now that just belongs to the government because they have a vested interest in what's happening there, what's going on there. But why didn't they do that with Skinwalker Ranch? Is Skinwalker Ranch, is anything really real there? Because the people who owned Skinwalker Ranch before it was sold, like people who lived there originally for like 60 years, never really had any claims of the paranormal. But then these other people came in and bought it for like $250,000 and then started having like some financial issues and then started claiming that there was like paranormal shit happening there. It leads into where they sell the property for however much they sold it for, got out of their debt. And then people started investing this money into the property. Like I said, Bigelow Aerospace bought it, invested $22 million into it. Now, Stephen Greenstreet has guys who say that the stuff that was being reported as happening on Skinwalker Ranch was mostly being made up because Mr. Bigelow would get upset whenever he was spending money out there and there was nothing happening. So that's why there's no photographic evidence of stuff out there. There's no real, like, I guess now with the new show, they're trying to show that there's stuff happening, but a lot of it seems very coincidental. And that sucks. Because I always kind of was like, oh man, like Skinwalker Ranch, it's, all these reports of stuff happening. But it goes back to what we were originally talking about with in society, how much of it is made up and how much of it is real? And how do we separate the two? You know what I mean? We have video evidence that shows us that we see Bigfoot walking through the forest. It was recorded from some dude like in the 70s or 80s or whatever, right? On his like,
The Gimlin footage.
camcorder. Yeah, exactly. But that's really inconclusive still. There are people who refute that. We still haven't, like 30, 40, 50 years later, we haven't.
Yeah, but you're always going to get that. You're never going to get everyone to agree on one thing.
Right. You know what I mean? Now, I watched a video on YouTube one time about the Mount St. Helens explosion and the cleanup efforts afterwards, and they had what looked like Sasquatch being carried out on stretchers by the military. And you can't find that video really anywhere now. It looks like it's been kind of scrubbed, I guess is what the term is for it.
I've heard that from a couple people.
But I thought that was really interesting. You know what I mean? Like, and that's inconclusive footage too, because like now you can't find the footage. So how do you analyze something you can't find? You
Well, that's just
know?
the
And
age of the
so,
internet where things are going to be starting to be deleted.
1984, Orson
Yeah.
Welles. And so that's paranormal, isn't it? Like, it was did Orson Welles, could he read the future? Could he see the future? Because the stuff that he wrote about in that book is all happening right now.
Let's just not say 1984 anymore. I'm tired of that example. There's better examples. Just talk about when Eisenhower mentioned the military industrial complex. He talked about an age where information was controlled by super class elites.
Well, and so did JFK, right?
That's an extent.
Yeah, but we know it. We know it is a thing today. Like the MIP is in control of everything, right? Or I'm sorry, the MIC, military industrial complex, is in control of everything. You know what I mean? From general education to what we see on TV to what's produced in movies, to what like nothing goes happens without their approval, I feel like.
Well,
Or
before
branches, their
we
tendrils.
because we're all hitting the 2 hour mark coming up here, but I want to give you a second to be able to promote your links. But if you have listened to Kelly and you're wondering what the hell he was talking about in brief episode parts, you can listen to. He's explained a lot of this stuff in more in depth on separate episodes.
Yeah, definitely. So I have a new website that you can check out. It's www.artofaz.com. Just to check out my art and some of the stuff that I do artistically, but you can get a hold of me or find me at on Instagram at Arizona underscore artistry. As well as, from my website, you can get a hold of me through text, phone, or email options there. That's all linked on my website there. So multi-purpose there. But yeah, if you check out some of my art, maybe it'll show you, kind of where I'm at with the disconnect in life. It's just like from one subject to the next, I have,
Well, thanks everybody for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank Podcast, and stay tuned for our next episode.